Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day to this point. We said we wanted to talk a little bit about Don Shula, who certainly touched a lot of lives, was the greatest coaches of all time in the NFL. There's no doubt about it. He passed away at age 90, and I told my personal story yesterday on the show. College roommate of mine when I was at the University of Kentucky in 1994. He was from Hollywood, Florida. He wanted to take me down to where he grew up, and so we went down to Miami in 1994, and we wanted to go to a Miami Hurricanes game on that Saturday, and we did. They beat Georgia Southern, and it was their 58th consecutive home win. They would go on to lose their next home game, ironically, and then the next day we went to the season opener in the NFL and saw the Dolphins and the Patriots, which was a lot of fun. But in between that, I wanted to see the Dolphins facility, and we stopped by there. It was locked up, and the gate opened. We're just two guys in our early 20s just standing out there, probably shouldn't have been on the property. Car pulls up, window comes down, and lo and behold, it was Don Shula and his wife, and they sat there and talked to us for like 5 minutes. The nicest people in the world. He didn't have to stop. He could have kept going, but instead he stopped, and it's a memory that I'll take with me for the rest of my life. And somebody who can certainly tell us a lot more about Don Shula is our next guest. Bill Curry is on the line with us, and he now joins us. Bill, how you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Well, I'm honored to, especially for the reason that we're having these visits. It's really hard to talk about the people that you loved and who loved you in the context of their death. But I'm at the age now where that's just what happens. And so it's a privilege to talk about Don Shula.
My memory was 5 minutes. Yours was much greater. What did Don Shula mean to Bill Curry?
Well, it meant everything in terms of my football career, because I was at a low point and had been placed on the expansion list with the new team in New Orleans, and they had immediately sought to trade me. And Don Shula called me and asked me if I'd be happy playing special teams. And I said, Coach, I'd be happy playing anything for you. I would walk to Baltimore to play for you. I got to Baltimore. He was true to his word. I became his special teams captain. And immediately in the very first game on national television, the first game I had played for the Baltimore Colts, we had an 80-yard punt return for a touchdown, and I clipped the guy right in front of our bench. And Shula, they called it back. Shula, I did not think it was a clip. And when Shula accosted me with some colorful language, I accosted him back with more colorful language. In the films, a couple of days later with the assistant coaches, Big John Sandusky said, Curry, is that a clip? And I said, well, it might be. He said, well, let me make a suggestion. Next time you decide to dog cuss the head coach on national TV, you make sure it's not a clip. Do you understand? And I remember thinking, well, I'm going to have a one-game career with the Baltimore Colts. Our wife was flying in with our baby daughter, and it was a terrible moment. So I went and found Coach Shula. He took me back in the equipment room. I apologized. I said, it'll never happen again. I did not think I had clipped a guy, and I shouldn't have yelled at you like that. You know what he did? He smiled. He said, I kind of like that. Just don't clip the guy. And that was the attitude. That was what he built with every player. He believed in us. And he did make it clear that that was not going to happen again, and I stayed true to my word. But and then that year when they tried me at middle linebacker, because I had played that in college and I failed miserably. And I thought he would cut me. Instead, he moved me back to offensive center, which gave me a long career in the NFL. And I don't think there are many coaches that would have done that. And I think he did it for a lot of guys. I think that's one of the reasons he won so many games. There were a bunch of us cast-offs. And once he believed, if he ever decided he believed in you, he saw something in you, he would never give up on you. So we would never give up on him.
Wow, that's great. And what I want to know from you is what makes the greats great. It's always fascinating to me. And I know you played for legendary coach Bobby Dodd when you were at Georgia Tech, and playing for Don Shula, as you said, with those great Colts teams. What made Don Shula great? Because he did it, not wasn't a short window. He did it for decades, a long time. He sustained a lot of success. So what makes certain coaches great? What do they have in them? You got to experience it. How would you answer that?
Well, there's not an easy answer because each one is different, and they're very, very few truly great coaches. And he's certainly one of them. Vince Lombardi is the winningest playoff coach in the history of the NFL. He had one style. Coach Dodd at Tech had another style. Coach Shula, yet another. And each of them is different. But they have a few common characteristics that you can always count on. They're honest. If they stand up in front of the team and tell you something, you know it's the truth. They never lie to you. If they do screw up and they say something dumb or they get mad and say something that's not true, they walk in the next day and admit it and correct it. They take responsibility for the team. When we play bad, they stand up and say, well, it's on me, but I'll fix it. And you don't want to hear that because when you go back on the practice field, that means they're going to fix it. And you're going to work overtime to be sure that you don't make the same mistakes that cost you whatever cost you the previous game. But just integrity, compassion, toughness with compassion, all the things that great leaders have, those great coaches have. And as you say, especially with somebody like Shula, and there's only one of those because nobody won as many games as he did. They can sustain it over decades and decades. It's mind-boggling, the energy that he had and how he could keep that going. And we all just, especially those of us whose careers he salvaged, we all just loved him for it.
We're talking to the great Bill Curry, longtime player in the NFL, also a longtime coach. A lot of you remember coaching Alabama and Kentucky in the SEC circles. And, Coach, you got to play for Don Shula when he was towards the beginning of his career. A lot of us on the show are on the age where we were watching Don Shula a little bit later in his career. And so I'm curious, from your standpoint, how much do you think he evolved? How much do you think he changed? Because that's one thing you hear everybody say. He had those great running teams with the Dolphins. You know, he coached Johnny Unitas and he coached Dan Marino. He could adapt his style to the personnel. But what do you think he was like? What was most different about him maybe in the early years as opposed to the later years?
Well, I didn't get to watch him in the later years because I was so busy trying to coach wherever I was coaching. But you couldn't help but notice what happened with Marino. And I kept thinking they'd win a couple more Super Bowls, and they came close. It's awful hard to win a Super Bowl. He adapted his style to the personnel when he had Larry Zonka and Mercury Morris and Jim Kick and those guys. They'd pound you into the dirt running the ball. Well, that was smart, and he designed run offenses that were and he had Paul Warfield on that team too, so just about the time you start bunching up in the middle of the eight-man front, there'd go Warfield deep and beat you on an 80-yard touchdown. So just being creative and being all around brilliant, smarter than the rest of us, that was the feeling you had when you that's the other thing. After a while, a guy like that starts to earn this cachet. When he steps on the field, you just say, uh-oh, we're going to have to suck it up today because this is Shula. You got to find something extra. And then you start pressing, and before you know it, he's got you again.
I heard Larry Zonka in an interview this morning talking about Coach Shula, and one of the things, the number one thing he said was the attention to detail. He said he would take any negative and he would teach it, he would turn it into a positive just by going through all of the details that needed to be corrected. Was that something you could pick up on? I'm sure it was.
It was that part was, yeah, I'm glad Zonka brought that. I'm glad you reminded me of that because I went from Vince Lombardi to Don Shula, and Coach Lombardi, as great as he was, did not spend extra time on the kicking game. And so when I got to his training camp, he had 10 days of two-a-days. Well, Shula had 6 weeks of two-a-days. Think about it. In the heat in Westminster, Maryland. And we had kicking game practices between the morning practice and the afternoon practice. And I was always a long snapper, so I always had to be out there. Every tiny detail in the kicking game, he made everybody cover kicks. He made the offensive linemen cover punts. And of course, everybody would moan and complain about that. But if anybody ever got thrown into a game where they had to do something like that, it wasn't the first time they had done it. It really was amazing, and Zonka's exactly right. And any kind of mistake, any sort of – I remember one meeting he talked for an hour about encroachment. He called it enroachment, and we were all snickering in the back of the room, but nobody snickered where he could tell it. Encroachment is where you line up all sides. Well, somebody had made the unforgivable sin of doing that in the previous game. It's an exhibition game, and he must have talked for an hour about encroachment. Well, nobody did it the rest of the year. And he would announce, we're going to be the most aggressive team in the NFL, and we're going to be the least penalized, and you better not be the one that gets the penalty, which is what I learned in my first game with him. And I thought that was a joke when I first heard it, because you can't be the most aggressive and the least penalized. Well, that's what we did almost every year. So, yes, he got a different kind of result from his teams because of that detail of that attention to the tiny, tiny detail.
You know, as a coach, you can appreciate, you know, the wins and the losses and also those games where you wish you'd have played a little bit better. And I one of the most famous games in football history, of course, is a game that you played in Super Bowl III. The story that, you know, from a distance that we all remember is Joe Namath and the great performance by the Jets, the upset. But I can imagine from the perspective of a coach like Don Shula, where you guys just didn't execute the way that you guys normally did. You were a dominant team, a heavy favorite, mistakes cost you. How much that would have aided him and driven him to be better in the following years?
Well, I imagine it did. None of us ever dared talk to him about it because I felt like we let him down. Naturally, he took responsibility, but I think that one was on us. Our record going into that game was 15-1, and there's a lot of talk about his great teams of the Dolphins, and they certainly were. But we'd only lost one game that year, and it was to Cleveland, and we had just been to Cleveland and beat them 34-0 in the NFL championship game. So we go into the Super Bowl 15-1 and then lose it. We end up the season 15-2, but nobody remembers that. They only remember us as losers, because we didn't win the big one. If you're in the United States of America and you're getting the big game, you better win it, because nobody's going to remember anything else. The year before that, my first year with them, when I was trying to play defense, our record at the end of the year was 11-1-2. And we did not make the playoffs. We lost one game, and we were not in the playoffs because the system didn't allow for wild card. So the Packers and the Colts ended up playing a game that came to be known as the Ice Bowl. People ask me all the time, were you in the Ice Bowl? No, but I was on a team that beat the Cowboys and the Packers that year and everybody else.
Wow.
Except that we made the mistake of losing one game. I mean, Shula almost had 2 years of undefeated in a row in Baltimore.
Wow. Bill Curry is with us, played for Don Shula with the Colts. And a discussion I was having with somebody this morning, Bill, was about just great coaches and those that are generational or multi-generational. Don Shula, of course, is one of those. His name came up, and I said that I feel like that as long as he coached through the different evolutions of football, how much the game changed, that you could drop him in any era and he would be successful. Do you agree with that statement?
Oh, yeah. Any of the great ones would be. Shula, of course, Lombardi, Chuck Noll. Chuck Noll, by the way, was our defensive coordinator under Shula that first year that I played in Baltimore. He hired great assistants. Wow. Bill Arnsparger was a defensive assistant that he took. Howard Schnellenberger was an assistant with Shula. He just had a gift for hiring great people with him, and I think that's another characteristic of the great ones, that they have the capacity to build these coaching trees of great coaches who go out from them with different personalities maybe and different offenses and defenses, but with a bit of that magic. And again, it's hard to put your finger on exactly what it is, but it's I think it's God-given, and I think probably those guys are born with it.
Was he one of those two that, and I know he, when he retired in 95, the salary cap era, the, you know, free agency era had pretty much just begun, but things are so different now with all the money involved that you have to treat players differently. You have to keep evolving as the years go on. Is that another part of it that you think that he would have been good at even if he had coached in today's era?
I don't think he would have treated anybody differently. I mean, I think if he thought you deserved a break, he might give you one break like he did with me. But if I had yelled at him again, I'd have been on the first Delta airline out of a Friendship Airport, that's for sure. I don't think he would have changed at all, and I don't think he needed to. I think the great ones, I think there's a special kind of respect that the men have for them in the locker room. And here's another thing I witnessed. I saw this happen. Really good football players would pass through and be snide and be arrogant toward our coaches. They'd be gone. They'd be gone in 2 weeks. They'd stand up in the locker room, talk about how great they were going to be, and everybody would look at each other and smile. We knew they were history because we didn't have that. You just didn't have that on our team. And we had great leaders on the team who bought in, so there were no divisions, no racism allowed, none whatsoever. Lombardi, Shula, those guys would not tolerate differences in cliques on the team. I think that's another mark of greatness.
Wow. Thank you, Bill, for going down memory lane with us and shedding a little light on Don Shula's career. Really appreciate it. It was good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
Well, it was good to talk to you, and it was so wonderful of you to remember your 5 minutes, because that's the way you treated people, and that's the way you're supposed to treat people. And we all watched that, and we learned.
Think about that, Bill. 1994, that exchange, and here we are in 2020, and I'm remembering it like it was yesterday, because I know that he could have easily, at that point, that was at the end of his career. All of his accomplishments, they could have pulled out of that facility and drove right by us. I wouldn't even have known it was him in the car. And, you know, instead he chose to stop and roll down his window and talk to two kids in their early 20s, just starting off their life. And like I said, it's a lasting impression. I'll take that with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, remember that when you have your whatever your big hit is, that's what the great ones do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thanks for doing this. Hope everything is well in your world. Continue to be safe,
yeah,
Bill.
Thank you. We're just fine. Okay, thanks. You too.
All right, that is Bill Curry. Man, that was really good stuff there. So coach at Alabama in the SEC, coach at Kentucky, coached at Georgia Tech, and if people remember, Willie, we had him on the show back when he was starting up the Georgia State program in Division I football.
Oh, yeah.
He was their first ever coach. Yeah, we had him on a couple of times, and really cool to hear him talk a lot about Don Shula. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Well, we've had some great interviews today. Brian Sweat, Lighthouse Christian School. We talked to him in the first hour of the show, reliving the historic flood in our area 10 years ago, this past weekend. Yeah, 10 years ago And Lighthouse Christian, an iconic video that we'll never forget. And he said it was a portable, the portable floating down 24, bobbing up and down on 24. Crazy. Christian Fulton, Titans cornerback, second-round pick out of LSU, joined us in the second hour. Buzz Peterson, roommate of Michael Jordan at North Carolina. Bet Michael Jordan was the best man in his wedding. Of course, former head coach at Tennessee and was an assistant coach at Vanderbilt, going down memory lane with him about Michael Jordan. And then Bill Curry, who you just heard, former Colt center, who played for Dennis Dodd, who played for Vince Lombardi, and played for Don Shula. Really cool stories from them. Here's one thing that stands out to me, and I've heard this now so many times over the years. And look, it resonates with me because I think it's true in life. But one thing I get out of people talking about great coaches, there is a dot that you can connect with all of them. They always tell you that the great ones would tell you the truth, right? They wouldn't BS you. You knew that you could trust what they were saying. And really that goes in life, right? If you've had a boss you don't trust that they're telling you the truth, or you feel like they lie to you, as opposed to one that's just straight up with you and tells you the truth, you feel like you can have a genuine conversation with them and they are genuine, don't you have more respect for them than the other? I mean, that holds true in life, right? And I hear that so many times about how we've heard, how many players have told us Willie Barry Trotz, how genuine he is, right? You just knew that he would shoot you straight, right? And how people had respect for Trotz because they knew that he was a genuine guy. He actually cared about you. And that is no different with athletes than all of you out there listening in whatever your trade is. Whatever you do as your profession or your career, you probably have the same thoughts with all the people you've worked for over the years. The ones that stand out where you admire, you know, or really think highly of, are the ones that you felt like were genuine, the ones that you felt like you could, you know, that would shoot you straight, as opposed to the ones that you didn't always think they were, you know, they were on the up and up, or they were maybe talking out of both sides of their mouth.
Oh, there's no doubt. And I think over the long term, that's who you keep the relationships with, right? Coaches like that. It's so much easier because there is a genuine side to it. And I'll be honest, I don't think I ever played for a coach that I thought was cold-hearted so much that it was all about winning and didn't care about anything other than that. I think there's probably some coaches out there that we can all think of that kind of gave off that thing where, you know, if you held a reunion, even for some successful teams, you might not see a lot of the former players show up. There are coaches out there that fit that category, and that's pretty sad. I do wonder sometimes if there's coaches that get to that time in their lives and they look back on it and they're like, you know what, I wish I was a little bit more human or a little bit more connecting, you know, as a person with the players, and wasn't all about the drive and just trying to do anything to win.
Well, the great ones know how to read their team. They know that, okay, I have to coach McFarland differently than I coach Donick, or I have to coach Donick differently than I coach McCabe. Those are the great ones. Those are the ones that know their players and what makes them tick, and that maybe, you know, you can be a little rougher on one guy, but you can on the other. And that's just because we're all wired differently. And Darren, to your point, not just with coaches, but bringing up people in life, whether it's a boss or, you know, or something like that. Those are the great ones that know. They know how to read their people and know what's gonna work for each individual, because that's what we all are. We're all individuals. Not everybody is the same. So I think when you're having the greatness conversation, that has to factor in.
Yeah, I do think it's probably coaching malpractice or leadership malpractice if you treat literally everybody the same, because that's not how life works, right?
Right, and I'm sure you're learning that.
Right, but the delicate art is not to come across as a hypocrite, right? It's got to be within some level of consistency. You know, it can't be like, well, I let You know, Darren's been caught breaking curfew 3 days in a row, and he still plays. Chase has been caught missing curfew, and he has to sit. He's been suspended. You know, it's a fine line, right? Mm-hmm. You definitely have to push different buttons to get the most out of them, but there's a limit that you can do that to where you're going to lose the team if you go too far with it.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's that fine line. But again, the great ones are the ones that find that fine line, and they know how to play that game and have the balance. I think Don Shula was certainly one of those. Bill Belichick is another one. You know, Saban. I mean, they may come off one way publicly, but behind the scenes, I'm sure there's a difference in how they deal with their players. But it's finding that fine line, and it's like Bill Curry said that he wouldn't have changed. He doesn't think Don Shula would have changed at all with this era, with the way things are now, and he shouldn't have. And I believe that. I believe that wholeheartedly.
Well, you don't last.
This was a great little story that I read today, kind of a memoir of somebody who covered Don Shula. They were talking about how his attention to detail, and this was probably around the era that you got a chance to meet him, Darren. He said after practice, this was a guy that covered him for one of the Miami papers. I'm trying to remember which one. But he would run, before he faced the media, he would run for 30 minutes after practice. And he would run around the field in a rectangle. And he said they would always watch to see if he would cut the corner. And he never did. He went around every cone. You ever have a coach that's like, okay, you got to go down and back, and you got to make sure you touch the line, or you have to go around the cone. If you cut the cone, everybody's got to go back and do it again. I'm sure he did that because a lot of coaches did. I know I played for coaches. Coach Fogler would have one of our assistants down watching to make sure everybody touched the line for our sprints. And if anybody missed the line, we were going back and do it again. So you did not want to be the person that did that. So the coach, it would have been easy for him to do it. It's after practice. Nobody's around.
Right.
And they always would watch because they had to wait for him anyway before he would address the media. And they're like, did he miss that cone? Nope. Did not miss the cone. It's a really good article.
I will never forget you bring that up about cutting the corner, that I had a coach it was just PE is all it was, but we were running around, we were doing laps, and on one of the laps I did that. Like I cut inside and cut the corner. And the coach came running over and he said, Chase, let me ask you something. And I'm standing there, I have no idea what I did. You know, I had no idea at the time. He goes, let me ask you something. Do you when you take a test, do you look at your neighbor's test? I said, no, sir. Okay. Well, then why are you going to cut a corner here? If you don't cut a corner anywhere else, why are you going to cut a corner here? I never did it again.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it's a good lesson to learn.
Yes, it is. When we come
back. It is a great kind of thing. What are the characteristics of the best coaches? Right? Because that's the discussion you get into with Don Shula. What separated him? It's a lot of these things we're talking about.
Yep. We come back, it seems like John Robinson has made a hire. How about we discuss that? On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
He is a very well-respected, very smart, very knowledgeable personnel guy. You know, has been mentioned for a lot of GM positions, I think, you know, has had a chance to interview for one and not interview for another, but I mean, he's at that level. You know, Monty was, when I was there, was a scout. He kind of went from, you know, what they do is they have a scout and then they have area scouts and then they have national scouts and then you become like an assistant college director and then director. And I think was ready to, you know, his next move would have been to a GM type position.
There you go. Floyd Reese on the afternoon show yesterday talking about Albert Breer's tweet yesterday saying, source, Patriots college scouting director Monty Ossenfort is headed to the Titans as the director of player personnel. And then Albert Breer's next tweet was, the Titans are loaded in the personnel department and on their coaching staff. Lots of rising stars on both sides, and it's starting to show up on the field. So There you go. That hasn't been made official. Or at least I haven't seen anything about that. I saw Albert Breer put that out there. I think Peter Keene has touched up on it. But other than that, there hasn't been boo from the Titans. But it looks like, according to Albert Breer and his source, that the Patriots college scouting director, who you just heard Floyd talking about, is headed to the Titans as their director of player personnel. What do you guys make of that?
Well, I'll take Floyd's word for it. You know, he sounds like a guy that's on the same page, sees the game the same way as John Robinson. They've worked together before. I think it certainly can't hurt. I give them credit to this point. I think they've done a pretty good job of finding that secondary talent. And so we'll see what this guy's area of expertise is. And, you know, I guess time will tell, but I think it's an overall a strong personnel department.
Yeah. Have they had a director of player personnel? Or I know they have a vice president of player personnel. I don't know if that's the same thing or if John has kind of handled that. I don't really know. But I said this morning, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know anything about him. Floyd obviously does. Floyd worked with him. So that's – I'm with Willie. I kind of go to Floyd on that. But – It's another hire based on the resume and based on everything that that Floyd said, that John Robinson is trying to make this football team better, as he likes to say, and he's getting a guy out of an organization that has won a lot of Super Bowls and has evaluated or has drafted a lot of talent, and he's been a part of that evaluation process. So hopefully it works here, and who knows? You know, I think that's. That's one thing that'll be discussed over the years as John Robinson continues to get better and better as a GM and build this team to compete for championships, of how many people under him and how many people on the coaching staff are, you know, going to leave for higher positions and essentially build a tree. You know, maybe this guy is the first step in that.
Wasn't he the guy when Bill O'Brien worked very hard to get his general manager out? Behind the scenes, wasn't he the guy rumored for that job for the Texans, but the Patriots blocked it? Wasn't that the same guy?
You might be right.
I think he was the one that was rumored to be the next Texans general manager, but the Patriots blocked it.
I'm looking it up. I think you might.
And didn't he interview for the Browns GM job too?
He did. He did. I did read that.
That he interviewed for the Browns job?
Yeah. And the Patriots blocked Austin Fort from interviewing for the Houston Texans GM job last year. ESPN has that.
I wonder why they blocked that move, but now he's coming to the Titans.
Good question. And you got to wonder overall, the big question is what is going on with the Patriots? You know, how are they holding together with this transition they're going through here?
What's realistic? I mean, what do we really think? I have a hard time believing that they're not missing a beat. I need to see it to believe it. I just kind of feel like they're not going to be a playoff team, but is that crazy to say after two decades?
Well, let me say this. This is based on our last two conversations, the one about being a great coach and then this one we're having now about what's happening to the Patriots. We're about to find out just how good or how great Bill Belichick really is. Because this is the first time in his career that, I mean, it's not the first time, but when he was with Cleveland, wasn't very good. When he gets to New England the first year, 5-11. He gets Brady, and then we know what happens. So now we have to see what it looks like without Brady, what post-Brady is. And I think that's going to be the big test for him. I don't know if it affects his legacy necessarily, but it might answer some questions.
Ryan Porth just texted us and said his contract had just expired in New England after the draft. So they decide they had not re-upped him, but yet just a year ago in the offseason they blocked him. That's interesting. Blocked him last year. This time in the offseason last year from interviewing for the Texans job, but a year later don't re-up his contract.
Well, then I wonder if they even offered. But this
seems
like a step up.
That's a fair point. Or maybe he just wanted to wait and play it out, see what everything was was going on, and then wait the season. Maybe he doesn't appreciate being blocked from last year, and he wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to happen again.
And I don't really know what the pecking order is with when it comes to, you know, I would assume director of player personnel, that's obviously high up there, but director of college scouting or whatever his previous title was, you know, where that all ranks. But I would assume this is a step up for him as he's on the ascension plan to eventually be a general manager, if I'm guessing right.
Yeah, it is.
So it makes sense. I mean, who knows?
Title-wise, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it makes sense to leave. But, yeah, to your point, I have no idea why Belichick would block that.
It's not a general manager job, but it's a step up from what he is in New England.
Right.
I don't know. I find that interesting.
This could be a position where he's going to – it's – I'm not going to say fast track, but he might get to a GM spot, even though he had interviewed for the Browns job. He was rumored for the Texans job and got blocked. This could make it an easier path for him to get to that here in a couple of years. So, you know, who knows?
How would you guys answer that today? If we had to bet on it, and the question is, will the Patriots make the playoffs this year? What are you betting? Yes or no? I need you to lock in an answer.
As we sit here today, like let's also believe that there might be another couple tricks up their sleeve before they take the field.
Really?
Right?
That would change your mind? Like what at this point, what
if
would
Cam
happen?
Newton's
if
the quarterback
Cam
as opposed
Newton.
To Jared
okay.
Stidham?
Okay.
They got Cam Newton.
All right. That's fair. There is, I guess, a piece out there. Sure. That would get everybody's attention, and yes, that could definitely change your mind. Okay. But today, how would you answer that?
Today, I have to say, if Jared Stidham's the quarterback, it's got to be 50-50 at best.
Right. That's kind of how I feel. Like, how could you really
even
think?
With a really good defense? Now, they won a lot of games last year with just great defense and a very average offense.
I'll answer the question, but I also have pulled up some odds that I will use as a part of this discussion. I'm going to say yes. I will lock in yes that they will make it. Even though that, you know, Buffalo has, of course, been better. Miami's getting better. New York is New York. But I'm still going to say they are the team to watch in that division until they're not. With all that said, Vegas odds, sportsbettingdime.com, they are minus...
Sportsbettingdime.com?
Yes. The Patriots are minus 205 to make the playoffs. They are plus 166 to miss.
And what does that mean?
It's not quite a heavy favorite, but it's not
50-50. It's a decent
favorite to make it, decent, but not a lock.
Yeah.
Like, the Kansas City Chiefs, minus 800 to make it, plus 530 to miss.
That is a monster favorite.
Yes.
Just to put in perspective.
The Tennessee Titans, for those of you wondering.
That was four times the favorite, Willie. The Chiefs, okay. Then the Patriots, just to put it in perspective. So, you know, they're saying, hey, we still like them to get to the playoffs, but don't love it. Like them, don't love it.
Right. Titans minus 134 to make it, plus 110 to miss.
So actually the Patriots have a better odds than the Titans to get to the playoffs?
Yep.
I would have to.
Patriots are the,
I don't know how I feel about that.
The third best to get to the playoffs as of right now.
If this is their team moving forward, if this is their team this year, and Stidham is the quarterback, I would be okay locking in my answer right now and saying they're not making the playoffs.
And I don't think anybody would necessarily push back with you. I mean, it's a...
Well, the problem is they're in a weak division. Yeah. So it's not like it's murderer's row. I mean, the Bills have been good, but it's still the Bills and the Jets, give me a break. And, you know, everybody feels like the Dolphins have gotten way better. How much better? I mean... tanking for Tua to now playoffs? That's quite a jump.
Well, I mean, there's questions.
That's a big part of it.
Tua will even play this year. And that's still out there.
Legit questions.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not ready to put Miami in the they're going to go win the division conversation. Buffalo, I mean, they've been better, obviously.
You could say but they've been to the playoffs two out of the last 3 years.
They have, but we're talking about winning a division
after missing 20 years.
Yeah. No, you're right. They're going to have something to say about it, but I'm not ready to write the Patriots off completely. So you're locking in no.
I said if Stidham is the quarterback, if this is what their team is.
Well, you asked how you phrased the question was we have to lock in an answer today.
Well, no, but you guys bring up a good point. I mean, if they sign Cam, I think that obviously changes the narrative. I'm saying if they were not, I said I would be willing to lock it in today if we knew they weren't going to sign Cam Newton. I would be willing to go on and lock it in that they won't. I just don't know how. I mean, I
like
so
the Bills,
silly to say
the way.
That.
I don't know if they're going to. I don't think they're going to dominate, but I think the Bills will be a very good team.
I do too. I mean, are they not the favorite? I mean, they traded for Stephon Diggs, and they're the favorite, right? Or no? Are the Patriots still the favorite?
Just a moment.
I think they have to be.
It's
going to be very close either way.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that think that when you have the breakthrough season, you tend to regress sometimes, so that might be some thought. And, of course, it's going to be reputation. The Bills haven't won a lot, needless to say, over the last decade.
Bills are, as of this was a week or so ago, the Bills are even to win the division, and New England is just behind at plus 140.
Okay.
So.
If you didn't hear, Frank Gore is, coming back for another year. Can you believe it? Frank Gore is signing a one-year deal in the division against the Patriots and the Bills. He will be signing a deal with the Jets. He turns 37 in about a week. And Frank Gore is still kicking. It's amazing. Good for him.
I mean, he's been – his career just that – he's the – what'd you call him earlier? The Energizer Buddy?
Yeah.
Energizer Bunny? Yep.
Just keeps going, man.
For you guys in all this talk, the football talk we've had today. We haven't hit on this. You hit on it, Darren, but we didn't discuss it because it was right before we brought Christian Fulton on. We had a chance to meet him for the first time, at least on the radio. He's taking number 26, so I guess that's it for Logan Ryan, right?
I was wondering if anybody – the problem is we bounced straight from that to Buzz Peterson. So my guess is we were – you guys – because I wanted to see if anybody would catch that.
I wanted to bring it up, but like you said, we had to jump to Buzz Peterson. But I saw that right before the show when I was in between the rundown and this show. I saw that the Titans tweeted that out, all the rookie numbers – and his popped up at 26, and I said, "Well, they're done with Logan Ryan. That's ball game."
But and haven't the Seahawks done the same thing, reportedly for Clowney, giving his number out to somebody?
I did not see that.
Number 90.
I think they did, and then they deleted it, or the young player that was going to take 90, put it out there and then retracted it. So I don't know. I thought I saw that somewhere.
I did not see where Clowney's number has been given out in Seattle. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I just didn't see it. But I threw that out there because I wanted to see if anybody would catch that, because that's the first thing I thought of when I saw it this morning. I was like, the guy we're going to have on at 11 o'clock is going to be wearing 26. Well, isn't that interesting?
Yup.
Guess that
so
means.
I, guess, I mean, look, there's you just wouldn't do that otherwise, right?
No.
There's no. How many times have you seen a number, and they figure it out? Like, I mean, I'm not gonna say that is the telltale sign that they're not going to re-sign Logan Ryan, but
it is. No, it is the telltale sign.
I don't think they are.
So you're going to bring back Logan Ryan and then ask him? Come on, that's the telltale sign. Which we already suspected anyway. Right? So I don't think that's any big surprise. I guess the question now is, where's Logan Ryan going and what's he going to get?
I don't think he's going to get $10 million.
Does he cave on what he said? I'm not taking less?
Might have to. But to be fair, I didn't think he'd still be sitting out here. You know, I didn't think he was a day one signing by any means, but I thought that he would have been signed by now.
So the NFL is going to...
If you thought there was any way, but if you thought there was any way that he could come back in a few weeks and say, you know what, guys, I misjudged my value. I'm not as valuable as I thought I was. I'll take your deal, whatever your last offer was. Doesn't that sort of shut that door? Like, what if you could get him for a huge bargain?
What's a huge bargain? $6 million a year?
I don't know. I mean, but there's got to be a price where Logan Ryan's worth it to bring back on your team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, he could be in that category of, you know, if somebody gets hurt in training camp. I mean, if he just hangs out until then.
Or is he secretly agreed to some team and it's just about when you can get in there and do a physical or something?
Could be.
Maybe so. It is closing time. NFL has said they are going to come out with their schedule Thursday evening at 7 o'clock. Our time. That's going to do it for us. You have a safe rest of your day. I want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.